title of this talk is Limited Dependent Variables. That's a catch-all category when your dependent variable is either a 0-1 or has a small number of options or is small counts. And the real thing about this is that the dependent variable is not continuous or even close to continuous, which is the underlying assumption of ordinary least squares. And so the thing we're going to talk about explicitly, or some of them, is binary choices. 0-1, multinomial choice, where you have a small number of choices, and counts, where your data is a count and the counts are reasonably small. And most of these models have the general framework of a probability of probability models, where you're looking at the probability that an event occurs. This is something that's relatively common in healthcare. If you think about the number of models that we have that are estimated using things like logistic models. The basic problem is that we have heteroscedastic error terms and that the predictions are not constrained to match the actual outcomes. Think about just the simple example of a yes-no, and either something happens or doesn't. You can think of that in terms of a 0-1 interval, but you can only have a 0 or a 1, and with ordinary least squares, you will have things, you can even have a negative predicted value where a negative number isn't possible. That's also true with counts. The general framework is, and I want to get the spotlight up here, is that if we have a general regression framework where our dependent variable y is a function of an intercept and a beta x matrix and an error term, and let's just take the zero, get rid of that.
That's always a fun message to get. You're going to want to turn the spotlight off and close the program, and hopefully that won't kick you out of the session.
Yeah, okay. There, okay. Yeah, I don't know. I tried to exit. Okay, let me turn the spotlight back on. Okay, so I'm going to talk about this in terms of a zero. Think of it as zero if you lived and one if you died, classic mortality, which is a common application here. And what the model is going to estimate is the probability that y is equal to 1 as a function of x beta, and the probability that y is equal to 0 is then 1 minus the function x beta. If you were to run this in ordinary least squares, which is sometimes called the linear probability model, you have two problems. I mentioned these before. Your EIs are heteroscedastic because they depend directly on x beta, because your predicted probability is either x beta or 1 minus x beta, and so there's a direct dependency between the predicted value and the error term in terms of how much you're off. And the second thing is that the predictions are not constrained to be 0 or 1. You know, the predicted probability, if you were to run this OLS, you can get a predicted probability anywhere in the range, but you can also get negative values and values that are greater than 1, neither of which are possible. And so running OLS really doesn't work, is not appropriate when you're trying to predict a binary outcome. And binary outcomes are very common in healthcare. I've mentioned mortality, but there's a huge host of different types of things where we estimate this, where model is a 0-1 type of outcome. You know, did the patient get an infection? Did a patient safety event occur? Was the patient rehospitalized in 30 days? Where they note that that is actually creating a binary variable out of a more continuous variable, days to rehospitalization. And did the patient decide to seek medical care for a condition? One could go on and on in terms of the list of different things that we commonly use in healthcare where it's a binary choice. And the standard approach in the biomedical literature is a logistic regression. And most of you are probably familiar with that. What you're modeling is the probability as a function of the exponential of x beta divided by 1 plus the exponential of x beta. That's just the technical things you've all been exposed, or I'm assuming you've been exposed to a logistic regression. I'm going to talk about a few of the things that one needs to consider that are reflective of some common errors. The advantage of logistic regression is, two of the big advantages is it's designed for relatively rare events, which is frequently what we are dealing with. For most conditions, mortality is a relatively rare condition. Hospital readmission rates are rare. Patient safety events are rare, and so on. And another major advantage is that it's commonly used in healthcare, and most readers of biomedical literature know how to interpret an odds ratio. But the there are other methods. Economists may commonly use a probit regression. This was actually developed. The classic example for which it was developed was looking at large purchase decisions where you had data on lots of individuals, but you only, say for purchasing a car, you only had the observation, did they purchase a car, not if they didn't purchase a car. And so you observe one if you're doing here and you're assuming the that they didn't purchase the car if you don't observe it. But you have data on all the individuals you're concerned with here in the X beta, so you can go ahead and estimate this type of model. I think it's useful to understand how it was conceived, and that's somewhat different than a logistic. Is another method that is commonly used. In terms of binary choice methods, there are actually other methods that use different distributions. In general, logistic and probit will give you about the same answer. Many years ago, it used to be a lot easier to calculate the marginal effects with probit, but now most modern programs will do that, so that's not really an issue. That used to be one justification why economists tended to use probit over logistics, but Stata will give you those answers right away. In terms of interpreting a logistic regression, the standard method, when you get the odds ratio, which is the in the exponentiation of the regression parameter that logistic produces, and the standard method of returning that people do is they say is use a percentage effect. So if you get a parameter estimate or an odds ratio of 1.5, you say that that is a 50% increase in the risk of the patient dying or whatever the event is that you're looking at. But this is really an approximation of the relative risk. And remember that the logistic regression is developed for or appropriate for relatively rare events. And when the incidence of your outcome starts to go above about 10%, this starts to break down. And this graph is pulled from a JAMA article. I will provide the reference in a minute. It's by Zhang et al., which develops a method of converting it. So you can see here that if you have an odds ratio, this is showing the odds ratios, and here we're showing the incidence of the event, and you can see that these curves are relatively flat up to around 10%, although they're starting for very big odds ratios to drift up even at 10%, and that as they get bigger, you get more and more of a deviation in terms of the risk ratio. So here, odds ratio of 2, and as you come up here, the risk ratio for an odds, if there's a 30% mortality rate, an odds ratio of 3 really only corresponds to about a risk ratio or an increase in risk of about 2. And that the, you can see that these curves increase almost exponentially, especially for the bigger odds ratios. And so that if your incidence of your event is higher, then you may need to make an adjustment. And we do apply more logistic regressions to situations where the probability in the of the outcome in the sample is more than 10%. And this Zhang and Yu developed this relatively simple adjustment to give you the risk ratio from the odds ratio, adjusting for P0, where P0 is the probability of the outcome in the sample. So, you know, in the example I referred to before, if you had, you know, let's say that in your sample that you had a 20% mortality rate that you were trying to, in your sample, that's a relatively high-risk group, but if you do, then you need to make this adjustment. And I've actually made a table here. This is from a paper I did that was published a few years ago, where the sample population mortality was about 20%. The sample was very low birth weight babies admitted to newborn intensive care units, which is a very high-risk population. And I'm just showing here what happens with a 20% mortality rate, the difference between the odds ratio and what is the true risk ratio as calculated by the Zhang formula. And as you can see here, with an odds ratio of 1.08, the adjustment is not that big in absolute terms. It is a 20% change. And that as you go up here, those adjustments get bigger. So this odds ratio of 1.72, or over 170% increase in the mortality risk, is really only a little over 100% increase in the mortality risk. A pretty big difference. And, in your odds ratio. And that corresponds to here, the 20%, we're starting at an odds ratio of 2 to 3, those curves are really starting to bend up. So that's what you're seeing here. And I think it's really important, and people don't always do this when they're reporting results, if their event rate is high. And, you know, if you're predicting something where you're looking at mortality and the mortality rate in the sample you're using is 1%, you don't have to worry about this. But as you get higher percents, you need to make this adjustment in terms of how you present the results. And this is something that is a commonly not done in the biomedical literature. Is Christine on or Elizabeth? Are there any questions yet?
It looks like you guys are having larger spread and network issues than you thought. Neither of them are able to get into the meeting. I do have one question here.
Okay.
Is the bias away from the null for OR versus RR different for protective versus harmful exposure?
No. I mean, it's purely a statistical relationship. And it depends on how you model the protective versus the model. So it's what you model is 0 versus 1, and this is a mathematical relationship depending on how you formulated the model.
Okay, great. Thank you. That's all the questions we have now.
Okay. And I'm going to try and remember to stop for questions on an ongoing basis. Okay, so just continuing with the some notes about a logistic or probit type model is that there are now, for these 0-1 choices, there are now all kinds of different things. You can do this for panel data, for both random and fixed effects. There's there's all kinds of variations for panel and group data. This number is probably dated. I was 3 or 4 years ago. I actually looked through the data manual to see how many different estimation commands there were related to 0-1 choice models and found over 30 of them. And given how data continues to expand, I'm sure that that has continued to grow. So basically, for just about any application, there are specific tailored programs. That's for people that use Stata. If you use SAS within Proc GLM, you can get it to do just about anything you want, but you have to be a little more savvy in terms of how you actually specify things. I want to also talk about the goodness of fit tests. Just a couple of notes. The most commonly reported statistics are the area under the ROC curve, or receiver operator curve. In SAS, this is the C statistic that shows up down at the bottom of the regression printout. And just because people don't always understand what the ROC curve is, it is the number that you, it is sort of how well, a measure of how well you the model predicted. It varies from 0.5 to 1, because if you just sit and flip a coin, you're going to be right half the time on average. And so that's what the 0.5 represents. And then this shows how many you predict. The curve, actually, if you graph it out, is showing correct predictions versus false predictions. And as you go up, it is measuring how much better than just flipping a coin are you doing, where 1 is perfect prediction. So it's a measure, and numbers, if you're getting up, 0.85, 0.9, you have a very strong model in terms of the fact that you're actually predicting 85 or 90% of the events. The other model is the Hosmer-Lemmershow test, and just for reference, I threw some numbers up here. So the Hosmer, that model that I was showing numbers from, the area under the RLC curve was 86%, so that's pretty good. And the Hosmer-Lemmershow test had a p-value of 0.34. In other words, it passed the Hosmer-Lemmershow test. With the Hosmer-Lemmershow test, if you get significant p-values, that means that there are problems with your predictive model. What the Hosmer-Lemmershow test does is it breaks your sample into N groups. The standard default in many programs is 10 different groups. Some programs will let you vary the number of groups you look at. And it puts, within each of those deciles, it compares the observed, it compares the observed number of deaths to the predicted number of deaths, and sees how, and looks at how well you do. One problem that does show up, and this is not a formal test, but I apologize for this. To stop the pop-ups, I tried to exit from my mail program before I signed on, but it keeps popping up because of the system-wide problems we're having with Outlook. Because it's breaking the sample into equal groups, so it's, let's say I have 10,000 observations, it's going to break it into groups of 1,000, and they're going to be ordered by that predicted probability of mortality, and then it compares the observed to the expected number of events in each group. But one thing that you can experience is if you have a model that is very good at predicting mortality, that almost all of the events are going to be in the top decile or the top two deciles. And, well, this isn't a four, you know, your model will then pass the Hosmer-Lemmershow test in terms of, if you have a very good model, it'll pass the test in terms of having a high p-value, and or a non-significant p-value, and so that, you know, statistically your model's okay. But if you're really concerned about how well your model's discriminating, this is sort of an additional test for how well your model's predicting, that a biostatistician at Stanford named Bill Brown and Hal Luff and I with Pat Romano developed many years ago. We never published it because the statistical properties of it didn't work out exactly, but it's a useful diagnostic if you're interested in how well your model is predicting. And so what we did is the same concept as the Hosmer-Lemmershow test, except that instead of dividing the sample up into equal numbers of patients, we divided the sample up by the number of predicted deaths and looked to see if we had systematic bias, you know, within that 10th decile. Were we over-predicting those at lower risk versus under-predicting someone with higher risk? And so this alternative specification, you have to code it by yourself. It's not that hard, but it can be very informative in terms of how your model is predicting. If anybody is actually interested in the details of this, you can send me an email. We had a paper that never got published because of some biostatisticians quibbling with us. It can be useful for tuning your regression, and we even have a residual method for fine-tuning your regression here. But I just thought I'd mention it, that the standard tests with the Hosmer-Lemmershow test, the issue is if your model predicts really well and you're pushing all the predicted events into one or two cells, you will always pass the Hosmer-Lemmershow test, but the you still might not be predicting as well as you might want to, and there are ways to deal with this. I'm just mentioning this, and we'll move on. One final note in terms of logistic regression, although this may apply to other things, is if you have a really big sample, you know, let's say I'm estimating something with a 0-1 event for, does among all enrolled veterans, how many of them actually use any medical care? I mean, that's not a good example because that number is very high and wouldn't be appropriate for logistic maybe, but, you know, something where you had millions of observations, because logistic or any of these other things are maximum likelihood models, they take much longer to run than an OLS model. But I just want to make the note that the X matrix, and so your beta X for is identical in all of these models, and well, they aren't exactly equal. The p-values from an OLS estimate are approximately the same as logistic model. The parameter estimates aren't right, but they tend to be correlated in terms of direction and how they interact with each other. And so if you have this problem and you have some computing problems, you can use OLS for model development in terms of doing things like looking for collinearity, testing your model specification in other ways, and then only estimate the final model with logit or other maximum likelihood routines. This is something that many years ago, when computing power was much more of an issue, people would use as computing powers increased. That is less of an issue today, but like, it's a neat trick if you're trying to run a really big sample on your own PC, for example. So moving on to what is called multinomial choice. Actually, are there any questions on logistic before I move on?
I'm not a subject expert. The question that I have here, what should we report?
Christina's in here now, too. Christina's in showing up as a presenter if you want to try and add her, Heidi.
I don't know.
I see her in the name.
Yep, I see her name, but I don't know if she's called in yet.
Okay. So, Christine, if you can hear, try to call into the call-in number, and Heidi will add it so that you can talk. So anyway, what was the question, Heidi?
The question, which should we report, OR or marginal effects? Does this depend on journal?
It will depend on journal and how you're trying to describe things. Economics journals, in general, you're going to want to report the ORs, and it's just in terms of just talking about the marginal effects. That's more for an economics type journal. It'll depend on the journal and what you're trying to explain. So I can't give you any hard rule of thumb because there isn't one. Biomedical literature, you tend to be using the OR. Okay, moving on, in terms of multinomial choice, is when there's more than one choice. So logistic is, yes, I lived or died, the patient lived or died. What if I'm trying to predict if there are four different treatment outcomes, which is chosen? So I've got four. And the options are more limited. And multivariate probit is where you're making, is it a way of modeling multiple different decisions where for each of them there are two decisions. And then there are two different logit models where you're making a single decision between multiple alternatives. A common application of the multinomial choice model is for which hospital did a patient end up in among the possible hospitals in their area. And within the multinomial, within the logit models, there are two different choices. There's what's called the conditional logit model, which Daniel McFadden developed and was associated with the Nobel Prize, and that is for unordered choices. He developed this model for looking at, for a person who's trying to get to work and they can drive their car, they can take a bus, they can take a subway, so they have several choices and they aren't ordered in any way. The multinomial logit model is a little more flexible. The choices don't have to be ordered, but they can be ordered. And as I said, the examples of these, what hospital do you use, choosing among treatment options, there's other applications of this as well. It has been used some in healthcare. And the conditional logit model is expressed, here's the formal expression of it. It's some, you have exponential of x beta divided by the sum of for the individual choice pair, individual I choosing choice J divided among the sum of all of those possibilities. The details of this is also known as the random utility model in that it was derived from consumer utility theory, which is nice in terms of if you're looking at this, it gives you your conceptual model, looking at how consumers choose from a set of options. The model is driven by the characteristics of the choices. The individual characteristics will cancel out in the calculation. You are only modeling how the characteristics of the possible choices affect the choice that is made, but there is a way within the McFadden model to backdoor individual characteristics in that, and I have actually done this in an example looking at hospital choice, because distance to the hospital is a very important driver, and so what we did to bring an individual characteristic back in is we interacted, did the patient have Medicaid insurance, with distance. And so when you have this continuous variable, you can bring an individual characteristic in by interacting it with, in this case, distance, with something. So that can backdoor individual characteristics into the model, but you have to be doing that with a continuous variable, not a binary variable. And one of the nice results is that the results are expressed as odds ratios, so in terms of the biomedical literature, people are familiar with them, and applications of this model have been published in even general medical journals like New England Journal or JAMA. So you can get this more advanced model into that. In terms of estimating McFadden's model. This is a little more difficult. When you estimate this within SAS, it requires that the number of choices be equal across all observations. That can be a problem because as you go to across different markets, the number of hospitals that are available are not the same, to continue the example I'm talking about. There's a statistical program out there called LimDep, which is specifically designed for limited dependent variables. It was developed by Green, the same one who has the a very common econometrics textbook. And in his in LimDep, there's an option for when you estimate this model called N choices that allows you to set the number of options for each choices, which is a very useful feature. I haven't actually confirmed this, but someone told me that within Stata in the C-Logit option that the group option allows you to do this, but I have not confirmed that. Just to put up some numbers, I mentioned looking at choice of hospitals. Just to throw some numbers up, I did a study looking at elderly service-connected veterans and their choice of using a VA or a non-VA hospital when they were hospitalized, and you can see here that all else held constant, that they were much more likely to choose the VA, but that distance also had a very strong effect, so how far they were from the VA reduced that probability. So moving on to the multinomial Logit model, what this does is it you have the probability of choosing option J, and without going into the details, what you have to do with this model, and I'm just going to skip the math here, is that you identify a reference choice, and then you get a parameter estimate for each of the other choices relative to that choice. So if it's a relative attraction of choice J compared to your reference choice. And so that is a restrictive element of using that model. The flip side is that this model allows for individual parameters to be included, and in most cases the model should include them. So if I'm looking at the hospital choice, and I'm looking within the I'm looking at do they choose the VA or do they choose one of the other hospitals that they could go to, I can include for the individual things like the individual's income, is the individual service connected, I could include diagnoses or previous medical history, all of these things that may well affect that choice can be included in the model. And that's a big advantage, but the disadvantage of it is that everything is relative to this reference choice. One thing to estimate in terms of both of these choice models is something called the independent irrelevant alternatives, and that is that the choices should be robust to varying the number of alternative choices. So one common method of addressing this is that you re-estimate the model after deleting some of the choices and look to see, are your parameter estimates robust? Do they change a lot? If they do change a lot. McFadden actually developed a regression-based test, and it is fairly easy to run. And if you fail the independence of irrelevant alternatives, what it's telling you is that you may have a nested model in terms of the choices are some way nested, so that if you take away some choices, it's affecting the others. So there may be a nested set of the choices. The same McFadden model can also be used to test for omitted variables in these types of applications, and I will note for many healthcare applications the models are very robust. So, to continue, the hospital choice is distance is a really dominant factor looking at where people go. And given that, when you're looking at distance, you pass the independence of irrelevant alternatives tests, no problem. Before I move on, are there any questions out there?
Karen, there was a question about logistic regression.
Okay, well, that's going back to two to go, but we can try and take it. Go ahead.
Okay, otherwise we can save it for the end.
Is it relevant to go in now, or do you think we should save to the end?
Let's save it for the end.
Okay, so you're on now. Okay. Moving on to count data. For count data, we have the same problem that we had with a 0, 1, or a few choices, in that the dependent variable can only assume specific values in a count. I mean, I'm talking about integer counts, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and the results can't be less than 0. The problem of using OLS versus using a formal count data model will diminish as the counts increase. The general rule of thumb is that if your counts are under 30 or predominantly under 30, you should be using a count data model and not using OLS, but that is just a general rule of thumb, and part of it will depend on what your distributions look like. Some examples where count data models are needed in healthcare or common applications. You're trying to look at the number of outpatients visits a patient had in a year. And for most patients, we'll see their doctor 1, 2, 3, or 4 times, but you will have, in terms of what's applicable within the VA, if you have a patient who has some of the behavioral health issues where they're coming in weekly or twice a week, they're going to have a very large number of visits. But with most patients only coming in to see the doctor a few times, that's a case where even though some of the variables are greater than 30, you want to do a count data because the vast majority of them are very small counts. Other example would be the number of times a prescription is filled or refilled within a year, given 30-day prescriptions. Most of those numbers are going to be 12 or less. And so you want to use a count. The number of adverse events in a unit or a hospital over some period of time, when you're looking at patient safety events in a particular unit or even in a hospital in, a week or a month, they're not going to be a whole lot of those, so you're, again, dealing with small counts. Those are just some examples of this. There can be lots of them. And when you do this, you need to use a count data model. And I will come back to this, but I just want to mention that when you use a count data model, or when you use OLS for a count data model, you can get numbers that aren't correct. And it's not just that in terms of the heteroscedasticity of the error terms. For many of the applications, say I'm looking at number of adverse events in a unit by week, and then there's going to be many weeks when there are zeros. And if you're estimating a situation where you have counts and you have lots of zeros, and you estimate this with OLS, it really confuses OLS and can not only give you answers where in terms of affecting your statistical power, but you can even get parameter estimates reversed. So if you're estimating something where you have counts, you really need to consider using a count data model. The classic count data model is a Poisson. The Poisson distribution has this very restrictive assumption that the mean and variance are equal, and therefore a much more common distribution that for use for count in count data model is the negative binomial. It is a better choice. In Stata, the basic negative binomial is NBREG. And in Stata, it's a very nice feature in that they sort of combine the Poisson and the negative binomial, and as part of it is a test for over dispersion as to which you should use. Again, I'm not going into there. Interpreting count data models, essentially you're estimating the log of the event rate as a function of beta x. So you have an incident rate ratio, which is the exponentiated beta, which is like an odds ratio and has a very similar interpretation. And so just to put this up, I was mentioning adverse events in a unit, and so I was in terms of the monthly infection rates, and if you look at the effect of RN tenure, how long the nurses have been working on the unit, and we got a beta of minus 0.26, and that's an incident rate ratio of 0.77, and so what that's saying is that the infection rates are going down as the number of years the nurses have worked on the unit is going up. In terms of using count data models, it is more common to see this happen when you see OLS used when you have counts than it is for binary or very limited choices. I mean, most people at this point in time know that if they have a 0-1 choice that they should use a logistic or equivalent. But you do, in terms of misapplications, very often see when the data is really counts and they aren't that big, people run OLS. And as I mentioned before, and I want to reiterate, when there are lots of zeros, you really reduce your statistical power, and you can even get a switch of parameters here. And this is from that same study I was referring to in terms of count data model, where we estimated we are looking at the effects of nurse staffing on patient outcomes. And just to show what happens in terms of statistical significance and false inferences that you can make, here in this first one, we had an almost, for looking at nurse staffing, we had an almost significant variable of better, more nurses reduces the infection rate, where in reality, these are the t-values, so this is a t-value, the Frammer estimate actually went the other way and was very, very small, so essentially no effect. The nurse staffing in this particular model, for LPN staffing, we had a very strong significant negative with OLS in a model where OLS should not be applied, and the effect was much smaller and not as significant with account data model. And again, here we get another sign reversal from, you know, borderline significant negative effect to no an estimate of a positive effect that wasn't significant. So I just reiterating that because of the nature where, and this was a sample where there were lots of zeros, so it's really confusing OLS, and not only is it affecting the statistical significance, but OLS is estimating parameter estimates that are actually in the opposite direction, and you can get things in the other. This is just an example I pulled up to show dramatic effect. The other thing to remember is that you can actually have effects in the, you can actually, in some cases, get improved statistical significance when you use a count data model compared to OLS. In this case, the significance was being reduced, but that is going to be a function of the nature of the data. Again, the rule of thumb is 30, but you should be considering a count model if most counts are small, and you also need to consider the data generating process and the distributions. And if they're a mixed situation, you may want to predict it, because if you have two different data generating processes that you're commingling, you may be better off splitting the model. And this is not that much of a VA relevant thing, but if I want to look at it's a good example of a mixed data generating process. If you look at the length of stay for all newborns, well, roughly 90% of them are normal well babies, and they all have lengths of stay less than 5 days, where are less than 6 days. where if they're vaginal deliveries, it's all, you know, 1, 2, 3 day stays, and C-section deliveries mostly have 4 and 5 day stays, and that's clearly a count, and then sick newborns have much longer lengths of stay, and if you look at the distribution, you've got, kids stay, you know, the kids born at 24, 25, 26 weeks, if they survive, staying 3 months or more, and so you have a very different distribution, and what you really have is two different data generating processes. And if you, and the reason this is an issue when you're thinking about this is if you try to model the length of stay of all newborns, the 90% that are well babies are going to sort of dominate the sample and affect the relationship you might really be interested in terms of the long lengths of stay for very sick newborns. And what you really have is two different data generating processes, and you want to split the sample and model this, where the big prediction is going to be cesarean section and maybe some other things, and then this sample down here, which is going to be based on how sick the newborns are. And the point I'm trying to make is that if I try to do it all together, I can get estimates for these very sick newborns that are, don't make much sense, because these much larger group that has a different data generating process dominates the sample. So it comes back to, you have to understand and know your data and think through what you're trying to estimate before you go and estimate the model. And I just want to note in closing that there are new models being introduced all the time and better ways to address some of the problems of limited dependent variables, and including that there are a lot of semi-parametric and non-parametric methods that may be appropriate for your particular use, and you know, you just need to consult. If you don't have a lot of expertise, you might want to consult with somebody that does have expertise in terms of what is appropriate for that analysis. And are there any questions that came up in that last section, Christine?
Yes. So concerning your comments about having different generating processes, someone asked, what are your thoughts about running models on two different samples versus using a two-part model?
A two-part model is one way of getting at the fact that there is different, that is a specific application of a different data generating processes. It would depend, you know, for the classic two-part model is for predicting healthcare spending is, did you have any use? And then if you had any use, what did you spend? And as a two-part data generating process, and that is structured for that particular different data generating process, and how one formulates this will depend on what the two different data generating processes you're trying to model are. I don't know if that, you know. So the, again, it'll depend on the question as to what, how you address the problem will depend on the question. Are there any other questions?
Not concerning that most recent section.
Okay, so in terms of coming back, just I'll put this up that I've put in the end of the thing a couple of various textbooks. I mentioned Green's textbook in terms of econometric analysis, and given that he had this software program that was focused on limited dependent variables, he has a lot of details in his textbook on that. Jeff Woolrich has a very good econometrics textbook on the analysis of panel and cross-sectional and panel data. And then it's old now, but the classic, it was sort of the original classic textbook on limited dependent and qualitative variables in econometrics by Madala, which is an old textbook. I'm assuming it's still in print, but my copy is very old from graduate school. And so we had a question from before on logistic regression.
Yes. Yes, so this question is about logistic regression, and it says, if the incidence and the outcome is too high and logistic regression is not appropriate, what are the choices for modeling? And is there a method to determine if the incidence and the outcome is too high for logistic regression?
Well, in terms of that, remember that it maxes out at 50% because then you can model the 1 minus incident. And you can use logistic regression when the incident rate is very high. You just need to be very conscious that your odds ratios are not the same. You know, you can't take just the percentage interpretation of the odds ratio, and you want to use that adjustment for the risk ratio. There isn't any exact rule of thumb. I know that people have used it when mortality rates or survival rates are fairly high. And it appears to work okay. I think the main thing is to remember that logistic is really designed for rare events, and you need, in terms of how to interpret the coefficients, you need to make the appropriate adjustment. And just in terms of that, I will note that, I also mentioned, I have a couple of journal references here. I mentioned that I included, you can get, as Heidi said, you can get the slides from that mini URL if you want the journal article for McFadden's specification test, and I've also included the Zhang reference for more details on the method of adjusting the odds ratio to the risk ratio. And the next lecture will be May 27th. And it's on cost of the dependent variable. And before everybody signs off.
Actually, Kieran, we had one other question.
Okay, so just let me just make a note here before I go on. And that is that once we finish, Heidi will be coming on and prompting you for a survey of. But okay, go ahead.
This question is concerning multinomial logit models.
The person
who asked the question sets up a scenario. So let's say you're examining how a pharmacological agent influences changes in cravings for a substance, say cocaine, which you split into increase, decrease, or no change. And here you're comparing people who receive the treatment and people who do not receive the treatment. There, would you use a multinomial logit model?
So that's an ordered choice. And in that case, because it's an ordered choice, an ordered probit may be more appropriate.
Okay.
Because it's ordered, whereas the multinomial models are for unordered choices.
Okay. Thank you. If the person has any questions to follow up on that, you can feel free to send it in. But that's all we have for questions, unless there are any others.
Okay, and we're almost done with the hour. So this is the next lecture. It's the first of two lectures on looking at the cost-dependent variable. Someone was referring to the two-part model. That's the classic application of this. And then Heidi will come on and give you instructions for how to give the follow-up survey.
Yes, I'm going to be closing the meeting out in just a moment, and at that point you will be prompted for a feedback form. I know most of you have filled them out in the past, and you feel you may not need to. We really do report these metrics, so we really do appreciate if you would fill it out for each session that you attend. So with that, I'm going to be closing out today's session. Thank you, everyone, for joining us for today's session, and we hope to see you at a future HSR&D Cyber Seminar. Thank you.